Argonautica by Apollonius Rhodius. Part 19. Now, goddesses, say how it is that beyond this sea, near the land of Ausonia and the Ligystian Isles, which are called Stoicades, the mighty tracks of the ship Argo are clearly sung of. What great constraint and need brought the heroes so far? What breezes wafted them? When Apsyrtus had fallen in mighty overthrow, Zeus himself, king of gods, was seized with wrath at what they had done, and he ordained that by the counsels of Aea and Circe they should cleanse themselves from this terrible stain of blood and suffer countless woes before their return. Yet none of the chieftains knew this, but far onward they sped, starting from the Hylian land, and they left behind all the islands that were before time thronged by the Colchians, the Liburnian Isles, isle after isle, Issa, Discalades, and lovely Pityeia. Next after them they came to Corcyra, where Poseidon settled the daughter of Asopus, fair-haired Corcyra, far from the land of Phlius, whence he had carried her off through love. And sailors, beholding it from the sea, all black with its somber woods, call it Corcyra the Black. And next they passed Melite, rejoicing in the soft-blowing breeze, and steep Corossus, and Nymphaea at a distance, where Lady Calypso, daughter of Atlas, dwelt. And they deemed they saw the misty mountains of thunder. And then Hera bethought her of the counsels and wrath of Zeus concerning them, and she devised an ending of their voyage, and stirred up storm winds before them, by which they were caught and borne back into the rocky isle of Electra. And straightway, on a sudden, there called to them in the midst of their course, speaking with the human voice, the beam of the hollow ship which Athena had set in the center of the stem, made of Dodonian oak. And deadly fear seized them as they heard the voice that told of the grievous wrath of Zeus, for it proclaimed that they should not escape the paths of an endless sea, nor grievous tempests, unless Circe should purge away the guilt of the ruthless murder of Apsyrtus. And it bade Polydeuces and Castor pray to the immortal gods first, to grant a path through the Ausonian Sea, where they should find Circe, daughter of Perse and Helios. Thus Argo cried through the darkness. And the sons of Tyndareus uprose and lifted their hands to the immortals, praying for each boon. But dejection held the rest of the minion heroes. And far on sped Argo under sail, and entered deep into the stream of Eridanus, where once, smitten on the breast by the blazing bolt, Phaeton, half-consumed, fell from the chariot of Helios into the opening of that deep lake. And even now it belcheth up heavy steam clouds from the smoldering wound. And no bird spreading its light wings can cross that water, but in mid-course it plunges into the flame, fluttering. And all around the maidens, the daughters of Helios, enclosed in tall poplars, wretchedly wail a piteous plaint, and from their eyes they shed on the ground bright drops of amber. These are dried by the sun upon the sand. But whenever the waters of the dark lake flow over the strand before the blast of the wailing wind, then they roll on in a mass into Eridanus with swelling tide. But the Celts have attached this story to them, that these are the tears of Leto's son Apollo, that are borne along by the eddies, the countless tears that he shed aforetime when he came to the sacred race of the Hyperboreans and left shining heaven at the chiding of his father, being in wrath concerning his son whom divine Coronus bare in bright Lacherea at the mouth of Amorus. And such is the story told among these men. But no desire for food nor drink seized the heroes, nor were their thoughts turned to joy. but they were sorely afflicted all day, heavy and faint at heart, with the noisome stench hard to endure, which the streams of Eridanus sent forth from Phaeton, still burning. And at night they heard the piercing lament of the daughters of Helios, wailing with shrill voice. And as they lamented, their tears were borne on the water like drops of oil. Thence they entered the deep stream of Rhodanus, which flows into Eridanus. And where they meet, there is a roar of mingling waters. Now that river, rising from the ends of the earth, where are the portals and mansions of night, on one side bursts forth upon the beach of ocean, at another pours into the Ionian Sea, and on the third, through seven mouths, sends its stream to the Sardinian Sea and its limitless bay. And from Rhodanus they entered stormy lakes, which spread throughout the Celtic mainland of wondrous size. And there they would have met with an inglorious calamity, for a certain branch of the river was bearing them toward a gulf of ocean, which in ignorance they were about to enter, and never would they have returned from there in safety. But Hera, leaping forth from heaven, pealed her cry from the Hercynian rock, and all together were shaken with fear of her cry, for terribly crashed the mighty firmament. And backward they turned by reason of the goddess, and noted the path by which their return was ordained. And after a long while, they came to the beach of the surging sea by the devising of Hera, passing unharmed through countless tribes of the Celts and Lygians. For round them the goddess poured a dread mist day by day as they fared on. And so, sailing through the midmost mouth, they reached the Stoicades Islands in safety, by the aid of the sons of Zeus, wherefore altars and sacred rites are established in their honor forever. And not that seafaring alone did they attend to succor, but Zeus granted to them the ships of future sailors too. Then, leaving the Stoicades, they passed on to the island Aethalia, where after their toil they wiped away with pebbles sweat in abundance. And pebbles like skin in color are strewn on the beach. And there are their quoits and their wondrous armor. And there is the Argoan harbor, called after them. And quickly from there they passed through the sea, beholding the Tyrrhenian shores of Ausonia. And they came to the famous harbor of Aea, and from the ship they cast hawsers to the shore near at hand. And here they found Circe bathing her head in the salt sea spray, for sorely had she been scared by visions of the night. With blood her chambers and all the walls of her palace seemed to be running, and flame was devouring all the magic herbs with which she used to bewitch strangers, whoever came. And she herself with murderous blood quenched the glowing flame, drawing it up in her hands, and she ceased from deadly fear. Wherefore, when morning came, she rose, and with sea-spray was bathing her hair and her garments. And beasts, not resembling the beasts of the wild, nor yet like men in body, but with a medley of limbs, went in a throng, as sheep from the fold in multitudes follow the shepherd. Such creatures, compacted of various limbs, did each herself produce from the primeval slime, when she had not yet grown solid beneath a rainless sky, nor yet had received a drop of moisture from the rays of the scorching sun. But time combined these forms and marshaled them in their ranks. In such wise, these monsters, shapeless of form, followed her. And exceeding wonder seized the heroes, and at once, as each gazed on the form and face of Circe, They readily guessed that she was the sister of Aeetes. Now, when she had dismissed the fears of her nightly visions, straightway she fared backwards, and in her subtlety she bade the heroes follow, charming them on with her hand. Thereupon the host remained steadfast at the bidding of Aeson's son. But Jason drew with him the Colchian maid, and both followed the selfsame path till they reached the hall of Circe. And she, in amaze at their coming, bade them sit on brightly burnished seats. And they, quiet and silent, sped to the hearth and sat there, as is the wont of wretched suppliants. Medea hid her face in both her hands, but Jason fixed in the ground the mighty hilted sword with which he had slain Aeetes' son, nor did they raise their eyes to meet her look. And straightway Circe became aware of the doom of a suppliant and the guilt of murder. Wherefore, in reverence for the ordinance of Zeus, the god of suppliants, who is a god of wrath, yet mightily aids slayers of men, she began to offer the sacrifice with which ruthless suppliants are cleansed from guilt when they approach the altar. First, to atone for the murder still unexpiated, she held above their heads the young of a sow whose dugs yet swelled from the fruit of the womb, and severing its neck, sprinkled their hands with the blood. And again she made propitiation with other drink offerings, calling on Zeus the cleanser, the protector of murder-stained suppliants. And all the defilements in a mass her attendants bore forth from the palace, the naiad nymphs who ministered all things to her. And within, Circe, standing by the hearth, kept burning atonement cakes without wine, praying the while that she might stay from their wrath the terrible Furies, and that Zeus himself might be propitious and gentle to them both, whether with hands stained by the blood of a stranger, or as kinsfolk by the blood of a kinsman, they should implore his grace. But when she had wrought all her task, then she raised them up and seated them on well-polished seats, and herself sat near, face to face with them. And at once she asked them clearly of their business and their voyaging, and whence they had come to her land and palace, and had thus seated themselves as suppliants at her hearth. For in truth, the hideous remembrance of her dreams entered her mind as she pondered, and she longed to hear the voice of the maiden, her kinswoman, as soon as she saw that she had raised her eyes from the ground. For all those of the race of Helios were plain to discern, since, by the far flashing of their eyes, they shot in front of them a gleam as of gold. So Medea told her all that she asked. The daughter of Aeetes of the gloomy heart, speaking gently in the Colchian tongue, both of the quest and the journeyings of the heroes, and of their toils and the swift contests, and how she had sinned through the counsels of her much-sorrowing sister, and how, with the sons of Phrixus, she had fled afar from the tyrannous horrors of her father. But she shrank from telling of the murder of Apsyrtus. Yet she escaped not Circe's ken. Nevertheless, in spite of all, Circe pitied the weeping maiden and spoke thus: "Poor wretch, and evil and shameful return hast thou planned. Not for long, I ween, wilt thou escape the heavy wrath of Aeetes, But soon will he go even to the dwellings of Hellas to avenge the blood of his son. For intolerable are the deeds that thou hast done. But since thou art my suppliant and my kinswoman, no further ill shall I devise against thee at thy coming. But begone from my halls, companioning the stranger, whoever he be, this unknown one that thou hast taken in thy father's despite. And kneel not to me at my hearth, for never will I approve thy counsels and thy shameful flight. Thus she spoke, and measureless anguish seized the maid, and over her eyes she cast her robe and poured forth a lamentation, until the hero took her by the hand and led her forth from the hall, quivering with fear. So they left the home of Circe. End of part 19.